Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and Packers News. I am Ryan Wood alongside my partner and colleague, Tom Silverstein. And Tom, it's only week five, but it's been a busy week.
It has been a week. It kind of reminds me of the old Ron Wolf days when you would come in on Wednesday and there'd be three new guys in the locker room or some kind of thing. I mean, when he was rebuilding the team in 92, 93, 94, every Wednesday there were new guys in the locker room. And this week was just kind of crazy that way.
Do you chalk this up to more urgency? Is there anything to be said about that? Everyone knows the stakes, right? Everyone knows this is a maybe one and done. You don't know what's going to happen in 2022. Boy, Brian Gutekunst ain't wasting no time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is, if there's a problem, fix it right now. And don't let, you know, the momentum that they're building, if they really are, or don't let it ruin their season. Everything is about home field advantage, you know, getting the best record in the NFC, all that. And yeah, I think he's moving. Now, he didn't go out and trade for Stephon Gilmore. You know, that would have been a huge move and it would have crushed their salary cap. But he's fishing. He's fishing around.
I want to continue talking about the significance and the reasons, the whys to this week. But before we do that, We should count it up, right? They didn't trade for Stephon Gilmore. Which, your thoughts on that? Would that have been the salary cap? To me, just was darn near impossible.
Yeah, it was that. And if you trade for him, you don't know what condition he's in. He's on PUP, so he's not eligible to play for another 2 weeks. And a lot of teams didn't want to. At least from the reports I read, that they didn't want a deal for him without seeing him. So, you know, and examining him, it could be kind of injury. Some teams might not pass him on their physical. So I think that was a concern. They would have had to take on about $5.5 million in cap money. And for a team that has 7.1, that doesn't leave you with much leeway going into the season. So...
Yeah, you know, it would have made sense on paper because when you have Jaire Alexander, and that's another big part to this whole thing, Jaire Alexander's shoulder injury, you had the report earlier this week that they're trying to figure out how to play on it. Like, is it one of those things that you just wrap it up and go out there? Is it one of those things they're going to need some time, or is it surgery? And if it's surgical, and Matt LaFleur said this week that they're going to do everything and avoid everything at all costs for it to be a surgery. But if it is surgical, very possibly, if not likely, ends this season. And if you talk about not having a Jaire Alexander, you know, David Bakhtiari was a season-changing injury last year, three days before Week 17. That was a season-changing injury. There's not a lot of those potential injuries on a roster. That was one. Jaire Alexander, losing him, that's a season-changing injury. That's why they're trying to avoid at all costs having surgery. So how do you see this playing out?
Well, so my understanding is that the doctors, the specialists, want to see where he's at the end of the week, because apparently there's some, they can tell whether it's healing or they can tell whether it's going to heal right, or I'm not really sure. It's kind of sketchy in my information, but I do know that that the specialists wanted to wait before they made that decision of whether it's short-term, whether it's long-term, or whether it's season-ending. And a lot of it has to do with the degree of the sprain, you know, and from my understanding is you get a bump on your shoulder, and if it's really bad, you have this really big bump on your shoulder. That's kind of bizarre, you know, so... if you see Jaire Alexander in the grocery store, you know, check and see where that bump is. You might find something out. I just think that I think they're going to find a way to get him to play, but not until they can get the right people to clear him.
Would it be more damaging for this team, speaking of season-ending or season-changing injuries, to lose Za'Darius Smith or Jaire Alexander? Which is the bigger season changer?
Wow. That's a good question. I think it's Alexander. I just pass rushers are so critical, but lockdown corners are rare. You know, every team has a pass rusher, and you sunk a first-round draft pick on Rashawn Gary, who obviously has a lot of talent, just hasn't put it together yet. You would expect him to be able to fill in. You don't have anybody who can fill Jair Alexander's position, even not by committee, you know? That's a big, big loss if he's out.
For that reason, I tend to agree with you. And to me, it's the gap between him and everyone else, or both of those players and everyone else on the roster. You know, Preston Smith has played well. Rashawn Gary is ascending. They have gotten out, you know, Chauncey Rivers on IR, and that was a guy that you get the sense the Packers were really bummed to see that, because he was the prototypical kid that came in, overachieved, and was kind of making a way for himself and earning it the hard way, and he was doing some good things. So the depth took a hit. But up front, you've seen Jonathan Garvin, you've seen Kingsley Keke, you've seen these guys make some type of depth plays. They're not game changers, but they've made some plays, whereas Jair Alexander and then who? Well, they went out and they got Rasul Douglas. They've got Kevin King coming back off concussion protocol. They've got Shandon Sullivan.
And they've got Isaac Yiadom, who played a little bit against the Steelers.
Right. So it's a huge gap between Jair Alexander and everyone else. Whereas Za'Darius Smith, for as much as he is a game wrecker and he is a dynamic pass rusher, there is at least with Za'Darius Smith some reinforcements there. I don't see how they can withstand a loss to Jair Alexander.
Yeah, so you can, in my opinion, you can replicate pass rush by committee. You know, you make up for it. I don't think you can make up for coverage by committee. If you got a weak spot in the secondary, you got a weak spot in the secondary, and you know you only have so many safeties to cover it up. They absolutely got to have Kingsley Keke has to get his act together and play more like he did Sunday. Jerry Montgomery was pretty funny Thursday, saying, you know, they're begging him, pleading with him to play with power and stop, you know, dancing around and letting these guys just sit back and block him. So he started to do that a little bit. They got to get something from Dean Lowry. They got to get more from Jonathan Garvin. You know, that's going to be a thing where by the middle of the season, he's got to be giving them more.
So you've got some type of reinforcements. The big one, Jalen Smith, inside linebacker, he's in town now. And it's going to be really fascinating, Tom, to see how quickly he can get up to speed. I mean, he's coming in, like Matt LaFleur said today, inside linebacker is the quarterback of your defense. It's important to know the playbook no matter what position you play. It's why it exists. But there's not a position that's more important on defense to know the playbook than inside linebacker. That is the position where you've got to have your eyes right. You've got to know your keys. It starts with the alignment, like Kirk Olivadotti was talking about. It's the basic alignment. Everything, it's so important, the mental part of the game. He's going to come in week 5. He's a veteran that's played a lot. How long do you think it's going to take Jalen Smith to have any kind of role on this defense, and what do you see that being?
Well, so the conspiracy theorist in me, who continually reads between the lines on things, sometimes correctly, sometimes not, I got the sense that coaches didn't want him, that they were like, we got all these guys and we like them, you know, and Joe Barry talked about how much he likes that room. And they're, now, I'm not sure I agree with them. Oren Burks still misses tackles, but they are getting something out of him. They get Barnes back this week, so they don't have to play Ty Summers. Where does this guy fit? You know, where is he going to play? Now, maybe he's extra, he's insurance in case guys get hurt. But I don't know where he plays. You know, most scouts I talk to about him think he's just not the the guy who can step up and play the run. You know, he can't shed blocks anymore. He can't really get in there and stick linemen. He can move laterally and chase, so he'd probably be good in zone kind of stuff, dropping into zones. But I think it will take him a while, and then I don't know where he fits. I have no idea, and neither did they. They, you know, usually when you get a new guy, you're like, yeah, we're going to look and see where we can get him. And they were like, yeah, I don't know. You know, we'll see. So coaches can be like that. They like their guys, and they don't want – sometimes they don't want guys new. But it's Gutekunst's job to identify guys, and who knows if they like Devondre Campbell, but – he sure as heck has been a good addition.
He has. And, you know, like Joe Barry was saying, there's a reason why you have an offseason, and that's to have this type of learning curve that Jalen Smith is now going to be going underway in October when it's not October. And that's what Devondre Campbell had, was an offseason. He was able to, you know, actually
put a training camp.
Yeah, training also, camp. Yeah, a training camp. But still, that's when you put in your installs, you're in pads, you're going ones-on-ones on offense and defense. It's much different than putting it together now. So it's. I think that's going to be fascinating. I think the difference between having a Jalen Smith, who the Packers were very high on coming into the 2016 draft. They weren't going to draft him in the first round, but they ended up going with Kenny Clark instead. It worked out pretty well for them. But they liked Jalen Smith. They had meetings with Jalen Smith. They were on that trail. He goes 34th overall to the Cowboys. Never had a chance. Who knows if they draft him in the second round? Never had that chance to do so. But they liked him coming in. That was 5 years ago. It's very different now. A lot of wear and tear, a lot of mileage on Jalen Smith.
I'm interested to see him run. One scout told me you can see a hitch in his gait because of the knee injury he suffered. I mean, that was a bad knee injury in college, and that's why he dropped so far. I'm kind of interested to see if that's the case. But the bottom line is he's not going to be contributing – in the next 3 weeks. You know, I think it'll take that at least that long for him to get up to speed.
Yeah, I think that's a minimum, too. Like you said, at least that's if he's doing anything in the next 3 weeks, that'd be a surprise. Now, maybe this is a move you make because you expect to be there at the end, right? This is a Super Bowl contender, Super Bowl favorite, and it's a move that could pay off in December and January.
Right, and it doesn't cost you anything. I mean, it's costing them $55,000 a week. So, big deal. You know, it's not killing their cap. Dallas is paying him 7.2 or 6.75 or whatever it is, money. So, I think in Brian Gutekunst's mind, it's like, what the heck? Adam, you can always, he's veteran leadership. He's a great locker room guy. And why not? You never know. You might need him.
So, all these moves, we haven't even gotten to, there's a game this week,
yeah.
The Cincinnati Bengals. I think the biggest question this week, it's really on the Bengals side. They're the upstart. They're the 3-1 after being 2-14 2 years ago, 4-11-1 last year.
Did we mention Raul Douglas?
Rasul Douglas. Passing from the Arizona Cardinals practice squad.
Another addition.
What do you have to say about him? Because I don't know what to make of him myself.
I didn't get a chance to ask anybody. He's big, 6'2", 210, something like that. Big corner.
Former third-round pick.
Yeah, and played in Philadelphia, started games there. Started in Carolina last year. Said he got COVID at midseason and just couldn't overcome it. There was a change in management in Carolina, and kind of slipped through the cracks. And then he had a trouble making a team this year. But, you know, sometimes guys like that, you know, they find their footing. It happened with Shannon Sullivan. It happened with Will Redmond, guys like that. So, you know, I'm sure that they saw something in him.
He had 2 interceptions his first season, 3 interceptions his second season. He's started 29 of 60 career games. He's played some football. Now it's just, you know, he started 11 of 14 games in 2020 last year for the Carolina Panthers. So he's an experienced guy.
I have a question though. So why are they plucking guys off other people's practice squads don't they have their own practice squad?
Kayvon Into, right?
Yeah, why aren't they taking him?
Good question.
I don't get it. You know, outside linebacker, why they got Tipa Galil there? I don't know. They don't seem to be interested in any of their own practice squad guys.
For one, they get murdered by the fans when that happens. It's, oh, the same old Packers. They're just elevating from the practice squad. This is an all-in year. How can they possibly be doing this?
They don't care about that. But, man, it just, does that say something about the practice squad? Maybe that's another podcast. I don't know. But it just occurred to me today.
Let me ask you this before we move on to the game, because you know that does count.
There is
a
game.
It does matter. Yeah. It does matter. There's a lot of a lot going on in Packerland this week, but a game is part of that. But let me ask you this: we talked about how this is urgency, right? This is all in. This is a different tact from Brian Gutekunst. I think that Packers fans might look at this and they might say, "Why now? Like, why? Where was this years ago?"
Mm-hmm.
Where on earth? You're bringing in Jalen Smith, who might not do a lick for you, just because where was this years ago when you had more of an expansive window?
I think it was there. I do think it was there. I think we're probably overvaluing Jalen Smith.
Sure.
And some of these guys, you know, I mean, they brought in a B.J. Goodson, Antonio Morrison, we were talking about him today. You know, they did that kind of stuff. I'm trying to remember the right tackle they brought in two years ago, the guy from Indianapolis, the starting right tackle, big guy. I can't believe I can't remember his name.
It's on the tip of my mind, too.
Velvier.
Yeah, Jared Velvier. Oh, I was like, what in the world? Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they've brought in guys like that. We're probably just – Jalen Smith is a big name, and that's why. And he's a big name who doesn't have much left. So, anyway, just to answer your question, I think it was there, and maybe it just seems like right now everything – is urgent.
So you're not buying there's more activity, they're busier, there's more substance there in the transaction waiver wire than in the past?
No, I think if they were really like crazy all in, they would have traded for Stephon Gilmore. But they didn't, you know, they're not that far in. So
there's a game this weekend, Tom. We'll both be there. It's in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Kind of an interesting place for the Packers and Aaron Rodgers historically.
Not a great place for him.
As I was saying, I think who the Bengals are is really, really going to be interesting to find out this week, because they are the upstart. The Packers are the established favorite, right? I mean, they're the team that's been there. But those Bengals sure look sneaky, scary good. Like, that's a game that, you know, I think the roster comes out, or the schedule comes out in April. You think, well, 2-14 2 years ago, 4-11-1 last year, that's a win. It's not an automatic win.
No. Cincinnati is going to put up some points. I mean, this is a perfect week for them to play the Packers, because they're getting T. Higgins back, probably. They got Tyler Boyd. They got Jamar Chase. They have a nice assemblage of wide receivers. And if there's a good week to play the Packers, this is it, without Jair Alexander. And we should mention about the injury report two key things. Kevin King has been back all week, and he's probably going to play. And Elton Jenkins was back in practice.
That was
today.
Huge.
That's really big. And we should talk about how that might play out. But to answer the question about the Bengals, I think they're a very competitive team. Now, you know, they lost to the Bears. They beat the Steelers. Joe Burrow is a heck of a quarterback. And I was just going to look at their passing yards. You had 342 versus Jacksonville, 217 versus Minnesota, 179 versus Chicago, 172. But they also run the ball. They won't hit, probably won't have Joe Mixon. That's a big loss for them. I think that really makes their offense go.
First of all, it's a testament to what this week has been that we got 20 minutes into this podcast and only now just mentioned that Elgton Jenkins was back at practice.
Yeah, I know.
That's kind of stunning. That's a huge deal, first and foremost. Where does he play? Is it left tackle where he was, or is it left guard?
I floated that, a week ago about maybe they put him back at left guard. But the more I've thought about it, they've had to adjust their offense with Yash Nyman. And it's taken away from some of their explosiveness by giving help, by taking the tight ends and lining everybody up really tight.
I mean, they do that.
Yeah. So I think they'll go back to Elgton Jenkins. And it's nice for them to have Yash Nyman, knowing that they could throw him in there on probably either side if something were to happen to Billy Turner. And they know Elgton Jenkins can move the guard in the blink of an eye. And Runyon has played pretty well. Runyon gives them something in the run game, I think, that Lucas Patrick doesn't. And I think that's helped them.
You mentioned Joe Burrow. He 3-1 as starting quarterback this season. The one loss, kind of bizarrely, in Chicago, 20-17. You look at his rating, 113.8 this season. You look at the game by game, first game, 128.8. Week three, 122.9. Last week, 132.8 against Jacksonville. That one game against Chicago, 66.2. They got to him. 5 sacks, 3 interceptions. They harassed him. He's a young quarterback. He's a heck of a quarterback, but if you can get after a young quarterback and make him uncomfortable, that's the way to do it. Now, it's going to be difficult when you don't have Za'Darius Smith or Jaire Alexander.
Yeah.
But that's what you've got to do. You've got to get after him. You got to put him on his butt, and that's what the Packers will be trying to do this week against Joe Burrow.
The two things about Joe Burrow, about his stats, that really stood out to me, one was his yards per attempt is 9.23, and that's excellent.
Off the charts, yeah.
But at the same time, he's completing 72.9% of his passes. So those don't fit. Usually that you have that high yards per attempt, it means you're throwing deep a lot. But I'm sure some of that has to do with Ja'Marr Chase, just blowing by people, and he's got 4 touchdowns. He's averaging 17.5 yards a catch. But it's still really impressive from Burrow. So he can throw it downfield, and he can throw for a high percentage. So I'm really interested. I'm kind of excited to watch him. I like watching good young quarterbacks, and I loved watching him in college. He was just phenomenal in college.
I'm looking forward to seeing him. I'm looking forward to seeing Ja'Marr Chase. How do the Packers match up in the secondary?
I think they're going to have to try to play it like they played Roethlisberger, and they're two different things, of course, two different quarterbacks. But they're going to have to try to keep everything in front of them. They just can't let Chase go off on them, and they're going to have to play their safeties deep, and they're going to have to force the Bengals to try to run on them. And it helps that Joe Mixon's probably not going to play. That will allow him to sit back and cover, too, and do what other teams are doing to their offense.
Have the Packers maybe figured out, or maybe not figured out, but rediscovered the offensive formula for them, getting back to the running game last week and kind of doing what they did in 2020? So it's kind of a rediscovery, if anything. They know what the answer is, but the way they were able to get back to the running game, and do you see that being any kind of issue against this Bengals defense?
I would say that's a big maybe. It was one. They looked like they were getting back to it for one game, against the Steelers. They really used Dylan to soften up the Steelers, and it was great. Of course, then they had that great series going where they're just pounding it down their throat, and then they go back to throwing it, and end up I think, kicking a field goal. But the Bengals' defense is pretty good. They give up a lot of passing yards, so Rodgers is going to be looking to fling it, I think. I think they're better against the run, and they got some pretty tough guys in the middle. So, I think it's going to be kind of tough to run on Cincinnati, but they have to try. They've got to try.
Well, you can't take that element out of the game. And it's like Nathaniel Hackett said today, the starting point is always the run game.
Mm-hmm.
And this offense is at its best when they have the run game. I think it'll be very interesting, Tom, to see if the Bengals do what the Steelers did last week and just – Devontae Adams said it was the most blatant double coverage he's ever had. And that's saying something when you're Devontae Adams, because you're going against double coverage literally every week at this point. So do the Bengals regress to the mean this week, knowing that Randall Cobb might go off on you, knowing that Al Lazard might go off on you, or do they continue to just do what the Steelers did? And you know what? Devontae Adams is not going to beat you.
I think they go with Devontae Adams is not going to beat us. Every team has played them cover two. And until they start gashing people in the run game, I mean, it was a good start against Pittsburgh, but they didn't blow too many long runs. I think Dylan had a 25-yarder. That was the longest.
25, and then Aaron Jones had a 15-yarder. They ended at 29 for 130.
Yeah, but they need to blow, you know, they need Aaron Jones to, you know, blast off a 70-yarder or something and then really threaten. So I think they go cover two just like everybody else. Plus, their corners aren't that good. Trey Waynes, Packers know him, you know, intimately, and Awuzie from the Cowboys, they know him, former Cowboy, they know him too. So I think it's a cover two game.
It is kind of stunning that Aaron Jones doesn't have a 20-yard run in the first four games.
It is, especially with all the cover two they're facing. But I think some of it is the offensive line just kind of getting its feet under it at this point, with no Bakhtiari and Jenkins outside and the basically three rookies, two and a half rookies, you know.
We got to talk about special teams, Tom, because there's a lot to talk about, good and bad,
yeah,
frankly. I guess the good, if you want to start there, they got an absolute weapon at punter. Corey Bajorquez, whose name I have learned how to say.
Yeah, nice
he's
job.
Been that good. He's, you know, 57-yard punt for fair catch out of the back of your end zone. It's kind of, you know, the coaches have praised the protection, saying that he was able to get his line out of the end zone, which is, it's impressive. You know, you got to have the protection when you're punting backed up like that. Obviously, the Gunners have a big part of that. Malik Taylor had a great play. But 57 yards to force a fair catch, you don't see that. You definitely don't see that out of your end zone. Does it affect how Matt LaFleur approaches the game when you know that you've got an absolute dynamite punter like that?
You know, to some degree, I think it's almost going to be wasted a little bit, because their offense, typically when their offense is rolling, they're going to be at least at the 50-yard line. So you're kind of not going to see this guy blast out of the end zone all that often, at least if their offense turns out to be what it usually is. I think the fact that he can kick directionally and that he does have great hang time is all they need. That's what they need. They couldn't get that out of J.K. Scott. They couldn't get the hang time, and they couldn't get the direction. And it was frustrating for them. And I think now they kind of got a guy who can do that. Now, you know, it's still only four games, but you can tell the guy's got the leg, and, you know, he knows where to put the ball. So I think they got bigger fish to fry on special teams, you know.
That would be the right side of that field goal protect unit. And really, you know, back to that dynamite punter, being able to vary the snap count as a holder. Because teams the last 2 weeks, the Steelers and the 49ers, have teed off on Corey Bajorquez being predictable with the snap. And the coaches have gone back and they've studied it. They've identified it. Maurice Drayton said today that they fixed it. He also said that teams are going to check the temperature to make sure it's really fixed
I don't really I don't know enough about special teams. I didn't know that when he puts his hand up, usually that's when they snap it. But I always thought there was a snap count, or, you know, 1 second, 2 second. I don't know. But yeah, that was clearly part of it. And then they had a breakdown. I mean, you go back, like he said, they didn't come, the guy who blocked it wasn't from the edge. It was from the inside of the edge.
The D-gap.
And that guy should never block a punt. That guy should be blocked. And basically what Drayton continues to say is the edge guy will never block a punt or a field goal. That given the 1.5 or whatever take, 1.5 to, what does he say, 1.5?
1.25 to 1.28.
Yeah.
Very, very precise.
Right. And so,
1.29, you're no good. 1.28, you're right on.
So, you know, to him, it's not even worth blocking that guy. You're better to block. But they didn't even do that. So they got to fix that. And, you know, they got to keep working on their kickoff returns, get Kylin Hill going, and, you know, they got to fix that.
That wasn't an offsides on the Steelers, was it?
I don't think so. I've watched it 10 times, and he explained Thursday that as soon as Hunter Bradley moves the ball, I mean, even forward, that's as good as a snap. So he moves he kind of jerks the ball forward and then does it. He said he's got to stop doing that, you know, because as soon
too.
As he jerks that,
yeah,
they can go. So I think they went on that little jerk snap and then hitch, you know, that he called it. And so I think they were okay.
I was surprised that they put it on the snap count and not the snap. I thought it was more the snap when I watched it too instead of the snap count.
Yeah. So either way, you know, they got lucky. And like Drayton said, it's a great learning experience. They got bailed out of a really big mistake. Now they just can't let it happen again.
Can this qualify as a trap game?
No.
I think the
Bengals are pretty good. I mean, let me rephrase that. I think the Bengals are a good team at home. I think they got their crowd going a little bit now, and they got a quarterback who can keep them in games. They got just a good enough defense to hang in there. I don't think it's a trap game. Packers would be stupid if they overlooked this one.
I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens down there. If the Packers win, a little story plug for you. If the Packers win, it'll be Matt LaFleur's 30th career regular season victory against 7 losses, 8-18. I'm not good at math, but I got a calculator. That's a lot. So look for on PackersNews.com tomorrow. We'll have a Matt LaFleur story on the difference, his development. He came in and he's 13-3, now 3-1, maybe 4-1, and potentially 30-7. But his development, what's different for him as a head coach now compared to 2 years ago? Had a lot of fun chatting with Matt LaFleur about that earlier this week. So keep an eye out for that. Keep an eye out for all extensive coverage from PackersNews.com going into Week 5. After the first quarter, it'll be the quarter point of the season, the 17-game schedule.
Yes, that's right.
How's
good
that
point.
For some more
good
math for
point.
You?
Man. I'll mention that on the blog.
We're going to
have a celebration on the blog.
We're going to have to make sure that we come up with the quarter pull stats at between the first and second quarter. It's going to be very rushed.
That's
but,
right.
Make sure you follow PackersNews.com for all coverage. Until then, he's Tom. I'm Ryan. Thank you so much for joining and listening along, everyone.